My name is Lucy Sales, and I've been attending Redeemer since I was a University of Texas undergrad student. So it's been, you know, about 20 years that I've been attending Redeemer. And I'm a CPA, so I am not a family financial planner, but I am the director of accounting and finance for a local fair trade jewelry company called Noonday Collection, and I've been working there for, I believe, 5 years this summer. So Jack asked me to talk about financial planning for families. Some of you might have a direct experience with this, some of the things I talk about. So you want to add it, chime in, give your insight, feel free. For today's presentation, I am talking, I do a lot of it based on Dave Ramsey's book, Total Money Makeover. And then in the retirement portion, I really added a lot more detail than he gives in his book. So some of the beginning principles are pretty basic, and we're going to go over those pretty fast, and then we're going to get more meaty into the retirement piece of it, Social Security, Medicare, that kind of thing. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and just open us up in prayer, actually, real fast. Okay, Father, I just thank you for our time today. Father, I pray that this talk might be helpful and edifying for everybody present. Father, help us to have wisdom and how to manage our money well in ways that glorify you. In your son's name we pray. Amen. Okay, so why talk about money? I like this verse from 1 Timothy 5:8. But if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. So why do we talk about financial planning? It's because we love the people in our families. We want to prepare and take care of them. So it's important to think about these things because we do want to provide for the people that we love in our lives. But there are lots of warnings about money in the Bible. I like this one particularly from Ecclesiastes 5:10. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. So if we focus too much on money, it's not going to satisfy us. Only God can provide for us and satisfy us. Okay, with those two kind of guiding principles, we'll get started. So we're going to go through these seven financial planning steps, but we're really going to focus on five, preparing for retirement, because of the nature of this Sunday school class. With any kind of planning, the first thing you need to do is write it down. So create a written budget. So this is from Dave Ramsey's book. This is kind of the percents that he recommends for the different categories. Again, if you want to get my slides, you can compare how you're doing with these allocations. Of course, different families have different priorities. Our percents look a little bit different than this. We value education, and so, you know, we might spend a little bit less on housing so we can send our kids to private school. Okay, so the step two of a financial plan is you want to fund an emergency fund. Okay, kind of my advice is a fully funded emergency fund is to cover 6 months of expenses. Now, this is just an estimate. If you're a sales rep and you have highly variable income, you might want to save more than 6 months. If you have a really steady job, 6 months might be fine. But kind of a, you know, rule of thumb is you want 6 months of expenses saved somewhere. Okay, so what is an emergency? Something you had no way of knowing was coming but has a major impact on your family. Example, job loss, medical emergency. And we all have these things that are unplanned. And I found that with Richard and on our family budget, the longer that we planned for such emergencies, the less we've needed our emergency fund, because then we're like, oh, well, we do get a speeding ticket every 5 years, and we need to save, you know, have an allocation for that. With your emergency fund, keep it in something liquid, meaning you want to be able to get the money without a penalty. Okay? And yeah, this is what I was just talking about. You'll find the longer you have an emergency fund, the less you'll use it, because you'll have experience with what you spend money on. Okay, and then my advice here is you don't own a home. Don't start saving for a down payment until you finish this step, just because once you add a house to the mix, you're going to find that all sorts of expenses that are unplanned arise. Everybody who owns a home understands what I'm talking about. Okay, step three, debt. I love this quote from Dave Ramsey from his book, "Your largest wealth-building asset is your income. When you tie it up in debt, you greatly hinder your ability to grow wealth. When you invest your income, you open yourself up to much more wealth creation." And the idea here is is if you have a lot of debt, you're paying for that debt in interest payments. And that interest payments are therefore represent money that you're not investing. So instead of paying for interest, you want the interest to be paying you. So you want to be saving your money or investing your money so you're gaining interest on your money. So his idea is that when you're hindering your money in debt payments, you're really hindering yourself to grow your income, how you're going to need it for retirement. Okay, debt myth, debt is a tool and should be used to create prosperity. Truth, debt adds considerable risk, most often doesn't bring prosperity and isn't used by wealthy people nearly as much as we are led to believe. 75% of the Forbes list of 400 richest people in America said the best way to build wealth is to become and stay debt-free. I thought that was really interesting that it was that high. Okay, paying off a credit, I think Beverly, this is your slide. Paying off credit card balance of 2,000 and 18% interest. So this kind of give you an idea of how much this is costing us. If you have a credit card balance of $2,000 and you just pay the minimum amount, you're paying almost $5,000 in interest. And it will take you 30 years to pay off that $2,000. It's amazing. If you pay an extra $100 on your credit card balance of $2,000, your interest will be $280, and it'll take you 1 year to pay it off. So again, it just shows you the magnitude of credit card debt is particularly onerous. You don't want to have credit card debt. This is a slide that shows mortgage interest. So if you have a $250,000 mortgage and let's say your mortgage interest is 4% your loan amount, over 30 years, you'll be spending about $180,000 on interest costs. If you were to say, hey, I'm going to have a 15-year mortgage instead of a 30-year mortgage, your interest costs drop down to $82,000. So you save almost $100,000 in interest costs by having a 15-year mortgage with a $250,000 loan. Okay, this Dave Ramsey's idea is kind of a strategy is to pay off your debts from smallest to largest. Except for your home mortgage. Again, it's much easier to become wealthy if you don't have debt payments. His idea is you list all your payments from smallest to largest, and you pay the minimum payment to stay current on all the debts except the smallest. And his idea is like it's this debt snowball. It's like you're getting momentum paying off your debts. Another way that I recommend doing it is paying your debts from the highest interest down, because that interest is so onerous. Consider selling items to pay off your debts. Don't sell your home unless you have payments above 45% of your monthly take-home pay. Do considering selling the car with the most debt on it. Good rule of thumb, except for your house, if you can't be debt-free on it, 18 to 20 months, sell it. Okay, insurance. You definitely need insurance. So health insurance, obviously, we're all mandated to have now. I particularly like health savings accounts. They're one of the best tax advantage accounts out there because the contributions that you put in the HSA are tax pre-tax, and when you take it out, it's also pre-tax. So you don't pay taxes going in, you don't pay taxes going out. It's the only account out there like that. Okay, so HSA, contribution rate pre-tax, the interest is earned tax-free. You can make tax-free withdrawals for qualified medical expenses. Okay, in 2018, the contribution limits, if you're individual, you can contribute $3,450. As family, you can contribute $6,850. Just one caveat, you can't contribute to an HSA once you're enrolled in Medicare, and you need to stop contributing 6 months before you enroll in Medicare. The money in your HSA you can use for qualified medical expenses, even if you change health plans, employers. And you can withdraw funds for non-qualified expenses before 65, but you'll pay a 20% penalty. But after 65, you can withdraw funds without the penalty, but you'll pay taxes if you're wanting to withdraw for non-medical events. But if you take it for medical, then it's tax-free. So I really like the health saving plan. Yeah.
So my employer at the HSA, they're limiting me at $2,400. And you said the personal limit was how much again for an individual?
It's $3,450.
All right.
Yeah.
So can you do that without your employer? Can you go on the open market and do this?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I've only seen them through employers. Yeah.
No, my employer doesn't contribute anything.
What does the 2,400 mean?
It's the limit. It's the most I can put in. She's saying the limit is $3,000 that you can put in and take out. Well, my employer has set it up, but the limit's 2,400. I just don't know why.
Could it be talking about flexible spending account?
It could be. Yeah, there is a flexible spending. Yeah, there are two different things. There is something called a flexible spending account.
And that is an addition to?
Yeah, with an FSA, the one caveat there is you have to spend all that money within the year. So with an HSA, it carries on from year to year to year. Whereas an FSA, it's like you use it or lose it within the year. And so that's the negative of that.
But also if you have an FSA with an HSA or with a high deductible, one thing, I don't think you're getting to this, you have to have a high deductible health insurance plan in order to put money into an HSA. And if you have all that, then, you know, there's one restriction on your FSA is that it can't be used for general medical expenses. Like sometimes it can only be used for like dental or vision expenses.
Okay, so we're going to talk about long-term care insurance in a minute and long-term care services, but you can use HSA to pay for long-term care insurance, premiums, and services, which will be kind of something important that we talk about in a minute. Okay, so car insurance, yeah, home insurance, we all know that. Life insurance, I recommend term insurance. So for those of us with children still at home, we really want life insurance because we want to provide for our children should something happen to us. So I really recommend it when your children are home and you still want to provide for them. So kind of the rule of thumb is 20-year level life insurance equal to 10 times your income. But again, like that's just a rule of thumb. You can get out your expenses and see, hey, how much do I really need should something happen to me? Long-term care insurance, number six, we're going to get into that one in retirement. But for long-term disability insurance, you're three times more likely to become disabled than die by before you turn 65. According to the Council of Disability Awareness, the average duration of a claim is nearly 3 years. The rule of thumb is that coverage amount is 60% of your gross pre-tax salary. Recommend buying a benefit period for at least 5 years. The cost is usually 1-3% of your salary. It's kind of expensive. But I do think the best place to get this is through your employer. A lot of employers offer that as a benefit that you can get. Okay, so retirement. This is where we're going to spend the bulk of our time. I like this verse from Proverbs 13:22. A good man leaves an inheritance to his children's children. Okay, so according to the Social Security Administration, if you look on their website today, this is what they'll say. A man turning 65 today will live to be 84.3 on average, and a woman will live to be 86.6 on average. So just in terms of thinking about our lifespan and how much we need to save for. How much should you save? Kind of the current thinking among financial planners today is 15% of before tax income to get you where you need to be. What to invest in. Dave Ramsey recommends a good growth stock mutual fund. There are lots of financial planners out there that can help with making these determinations. One of the things that Richard and I do, if you look at like Schwab or Fidelity, they'll sell retirement mutual funds that are targeted to your retirement date. So that's what we do. It's just simple. They allocate the stocks in bonds to the allocation mix that we need as we get closer to retirement. It's super simple. If your employer offers a matching 401k, you want to put your money there first. You want to get that matching funds from your employer. Don't leave those on the table. Then put in an IRA, either regular or Roth. Okay, we're going to talk about the differences between a traditional versus Roth IRA. And this is the same with a 401k account. So with a traditional, it's currently deductible for taxes. So that means if you put $10,000 into your traditional IRA or your traditional 401k account, that $10,000 isn't being taxed. Okay? But if a Roth, you put that $10,000 in and you're paying taxes on that $10,000. But with the traditional, you're not paying taxes on the money when it goes in, but you're paying taxes on the money when it comes out. But you're not only paying taxes on the money, that $10,000, you're also paying taxes on all the gains of the $10,000. Okay, so that's a key difference between a traditional and Roth. And then with a Roth, There are no taxes at withdrawal, even for your heirs. Okay, with a traditional IRA at 70.5, you have to start taking regular minimum distributions. With a Roth, there are no RMDs in a Roth IRA. And with a 401k account, with a Roth 401k account, you do have regular minimum distributions, but you can always roll it over into a Roth IRA. Okay, so with a traditional IRA, you can't add any money to it after 70.5, but you can continue making contributions to a Roth IRA after 70.5. So the advice that you'll hear commonly out there is that you want to choose a traditional if you expect to pay less taxes at retirement, and choose a Roth if you want to pay same or higher taxes at retirement. And I think that's a little bit of a simplistic way of looking at it. And I want to go over why on this next slide. So in this next slide, this first chart. So let's say you're 21 and you retire at 65. You're saving $10,000 a year. You're earning 7% compound interest. Your tax rate while you're working is 22%. And your tax rate when you're retired is 12%. So your tax rate is lower at retirement. So the common line of thinking is you should invest in a traditional IRA or 401k account in this instance. But you can see that you'll actually net more income with a Roth. So you'll $244,000 more money investing in a Roth 401k. And the reason why that is because you're not taxed on the gains of a Roth. Okay? So now when a traditional makes sense is if you say, okay, I'm putting the $10,000 in my 401k account, my traditional account, and it's saving me, in this case, it's 22% tax rate, $2,200. So I'm going to take that $2,200 and I'm saving and I'm going to invest it and add to my investment into my traditional 401k account. So instead of investing $10,000, you're investing $12,200. If you were to do that, then in that case, the traditional will net you more money at the end of your retirement. So $331,000 more dollars in that case. So it's kind of like a strategy. So as you're saying, you're going to take your tax savings and invest that additional money into your retirement account. Okay. And that's kind of a strategy to have a higher account. You actually have to do that. Right. That's a good point. You have to do that. Otherwise, the Roth makes more sense.
Well, it's easy to say, well, this month I can't afford to put it in for my
investment. You really have to follow through.
You actually have to follow through on it.
Yeah, but when the lottery gets really high, those are the months you should kind of go for it, right?
No, yeah, that's right.
But I thought that was okay.
So yeah, that would be a bad strategy.
So if you know you probably won't follow through it.
Do Roth, yeah.
Well, no, I was thinking it sort of matters how old you are. If you're 21,
oh, right, it does matter.
If you're 61, it might be a different
way. You're right. Right. Yeah, so all that's a very good point, Candace. It's worthwhile just opening up a cell and putting down the numbers and say, like, at my current age, what will make sense? What's my return been for me so far in life? And just when running, it'll take 30 minutes, but it can make a big difference in your net income later on. Okay, so how much of a nest egg do you need for retirement? This is from Fidelity. They're saying you are on track with retirement if at age 35 you have 1x your annual salary saved. And you are on track at 45 if you have 3x your annual salary saved. Is 67, 8x your annual salary saved. And their assumptions in order to make these targets that you're saving 15% of your income each year, you work for 42 years, you don't live past 92.
Well, great.
I know.
Let's make sure we're going
to
by 92. Okay.
I know. Yeah, this is assuming an annual return of 5.5, which is low, I think. I think you could probably get a 7% return. And at the end of the Social Security, that you'll have 85% of your pre-tax salary or retirement. And I think that the studies I've seen is most people end up living on 60% of your pre-retirement income. So 85% is a little bit conservative.
I think next week we're talking about what we do at age 92.
My dad's 92, I'll let you know.
Well, Brett's mom's 97, so come on, I mean.
Okay, Social Security. If you look on the Social Security Administration's website, they'll tell you that it's meant to only cover 40% of your wage earner's income. And again, retirees typically need 60 to 70% or more of their pre-retirement income to live comfortably. So Social Security was never meant to cover all of our retirement. So that's kind of my first point. My next point is there Social Security experts out there? I do recommend, as you're approaching retirement, getting with one of those experts and just, because there are ways that you can analyze your personal situation. Everybody's situation is different. So I do recommend getting together with one of those folks.
I think there are 84 different combinations of things that they analyze of how you can do it.
Yeah. Thank you, Beverly. Did y'all do that? Yes.
I think it was 84 or 87 different possibilities that they were dealing with.
Exactly. So it's complicated, all that to say.
Second and third that you do that, which you suggest.
Yeah. So... but just to kind of give you kind of some very high level ideas of how Social Security works. So to claim Social Security, you need 40 credits or 10 years of Social Security wages to qualify for retirement benefits. So basically, if you earn $1,300 in a quarter, you get a credit for Social Security and you need 40 of those credits to qualify for Social Security. Now, if you're a spouse, you can qualify on your spouse's work record too. And we'll get to that in a minute. Your benefits are based on your highest 35 years of earnings. So they take 35 years of your highest earnings and they average them together. So I thought that was interesting, for people to realize that, like, hey, like maybe you're getting close to retirement and, the bottom 34th and 35th year of your work history is you were a lifeguard in high school. So maybe it's worthwhile to work an extra year to get that $2,000 off of your average. So, and then another thing to point out, Social Security benefits are subject to income taxes potentially depending on your income level. Some people don't realize that. And then another unfortunate thing to point out is, according to the chief actuary of the Social Security system, by 2034, incoming taxes will be enough to pay for 79% of scheduled benefits. That's just at the current rate it is right now. So all that to say is, like, Social Security isn't in a stable footing currently. Let's hope our political leaders get their act together and figure it out. So if you're born after 1960, the retirement age is now 67. So it was 66 before, and now it's 67. And at that age, you'll get 100% of benefits. The earliest age to get benefits is 62. But if you start taking Social Security at 62, you'll get 70% of your full benefit permanently. So you permanently get a less amount of benefit. For each year that you delay your retirement up to age 70, your benefit goes up 8%. So if you delay until 70, you'll get 24% higher monthly income. So if your benefit is $2,000 a month, that extra 24% amounts to an extra $480. Okay, so spousal benefits, you can collect as soon as either you reach 62 or your spouse has started collecting their own retirement benefit. So a spousal benefit is for, let's say, for, you know, women who don't have 10 years of work history because they were at home with their children. If you claim spousal benefits prior to your full retirement age, again, they're reduced. So if you retire at 62, benefits are reduced 35%. So they're reduced more than if you were going on your own work record. Okay, so the maximum benefit for a spousal benefit is half of the spouse's primary insurance amount. We're going to get into two examples that really illustrate this in a minute. And if your spouse dies and they delayed retirement, you'll get their retirement benefits, including let me give it to an example. It's a lot easier to see. Okay, so John Smith has a $2,000 a month retirement benefit. He retired at 67, and his wife Jane gets $1,000 is a 50% spousal benefit. So their total family income is $3,000. When John dies, Jane will get $2,000 a month as her survivor benefit. So her total income as a widow is now $2,000 a month. So again, it shows that like when a spouse dies, there's less income in the household. Okay, but let's say that John Smith waited and retired at 70. So his he gets $2,480 a month as a retirement benefit, and this Jane, so Jane, his wife, still only gets $1,000. So that's the max she can get as a 50% spousal benefit. So their total family income is $3,480. And then when John dies, Jane steps up and gets what John got before. So she's now getting $2,480 a month as her survival benefit. So the total income for Jane as a widow is $2,480. So she's getting 24% more than if John had not delayed his retirement at 70. So all that to say is, like, this is just an example of how complex it can get and why it's worthwhile getting together with a Social Security expert to, like, help you analyze your situation and make sure that you're taking care of your loved ones.
Question?
Yeah.
Okay, so I get Social Security because I work.
Okay. Yes.
I get Social Security because he worked. But he worked a lot longer and made a lot more money than I did. So if he passes away, what do I get?
You go into the Social Security office and show the definition there, and they push you on this.
So do I only get his then?
Yes.
I don't get mine.
That's right.
You get
only
the larger.
The larger, okay. Yes.
You get the larger.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Liz, you can answer your question. So if you're both working and you're both getting close to retirement age, should you both wait until the highest income earner reaches the maximum age?
Yeah.
So that the spouse.
Yeah, I would say go talk to an expert because
we changed what we were planning after we sat down and ran the numbers with somebody. So.
Yeah. You do need to get into the nitty-gritty of your personal situation. Yeah,
the rules have changed recently.
Yeah, that's right.
Have. So you've got they've got some age requirements that some of us come under and younger people don't. But it is really complicated, and you just need to have somebody run the numbers for you.
That's exactly right.
You have to decide if you want to work until you're 70 or whether you want to do something else.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on your health and how you're doing personally, too. Okay, Medicare, when to enroll. Okay, you're eligible for Medicare when you turn 65. Okay, and so basically, you have a seven-month window to enroll for Medicare. So you have the 3 months before you turn 65, the month you turn 65, and then the 3 months after you turn 65. And if you don't do it in that window, you'll have penalties, permanent penalties. So you want to pay attention to the windows.
Financial penalty.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Will end up costing you more. Yeah. So for Part A hospital insurance, for most people, you're not going to pay any money for Part A. You need 40 credits of employment, but again, you can get it off of your spouse's work history. The deductible in 2018 is $1,340, and it covers the first 60 days, and then 61 through 90th day, the coinsurance is $335 per day. And then you get 60 lifetime days, $670 per day. But I think the main point I want to get here is that beyond your lifetime reserve days, you pay for all costs. And so we're going to get to in a minute, like when you set, you really need more coverage other than just Medicare is my main point here. So for Part B, is for physician services. The monthly premium for most people is $134. You have an annual deductible of $183. And then you pay 20% of costs. But beware, there's not a cap on these costs. So again, this is another illustration is you really need something in addition to Medicare. It's because you don't want to be in a situation where you have 20% of no cap. There's no cap on what you're paying. Their Part D is prescription drugs. The 2018 base premium for most people is $35.02. And again, warning, if you don't sign up when you're first eligible and later add, you have an ongoing penalty. So to close the Part A, B, and D gaps, most recipients enroll in some form of Medigap insurance or a Medicare Advantage plan, Part C. Again, that with your Social Security expert, get them to help you with Medicare too. And then just another kind of unfortunate thing. In the 2016 Medicare trustees report projects that hospital insurance trust fund will remain solvent until 2028, at which point HI revenues are projected to cover 87% of program costs. Again, so we need our elected officials to figure this out. Okay.
Can I just add one more thing?
Yeah.
You don't have to enroll during that 7-month window if you're still working.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Insurance through your employer or your spouse is getting insurance through your working spouse.
Thank you. That's exactly right. Long-term care. Okay. Medicare, this is really important for people to understand this. Medicare does not cover long-term care costs. So long-term care is things like you need help eating, bathing, moving around, those type of help. And Medicaid does, but only if you have $2,000 or less in the bank, okay? So the typical 65-year-old has a 52% chance of needing long-term care services and supports at some point in your life. But of those 52%, about 70% of those are discharged within 90 days. So the bad news is half of us are going to end up needing long-term care. The good news is that those of us that do, 70% of us will only need it for 90 days or less. But after 2 years, less than 6% of those minutes are still there. The average time for long-term care is $138,000. So long-term care insurance, if you're wealthy, if you have a... Yeah.
Is that total for the average of 2 years, or is that...
Just of everybody who needs long-term care. All average together, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Some people are. If you're wealthy...
Yeah, a long way above the average.
If you're wealthy, you probably want to self-fund for long-term care insurance. And then if you're poor, you have less than $2,000 in the bank, you can just use Medicaid. So for everybody else, the rest of us, you want to buy around 55, and the cost will be about $3,500 per year per couple. So it's kind of expensive. A warning is that long-term care insurance is known for high annual rate increases, unfortunately. There is something called a partnership plan, so it works in conjunction with Medicaid, so you can save up to $100,000 in a bank account, but it's a lot it's cheaper, but then Medicaid will be taken over, so that's the negative. Most policies don't pay anything until a person has been in the home for 90 days, so that's something to be aware of. So when you're getting into these policies, make sure you get into the nitty-gritty of what it covers.
I would suggest you get an inflation clause on.
Oh, wait, I have it.
Sorry.
Compound inflation protection on benefits. Yes, thank you, Verily. You're right. You do want that. Yeah. Okay. I feel this is so, depressing. Yes.
I just want to say, my husband, who worked for New York Life for 33 years, back in the late 80s, New York Life came out with a long-term care policy, and he bought one for each one of us. It was $35, $44 a week. I was tipped because we had two kids in private school, we were all this stuff, and what long-term care for, real? Best thing he ever did.
Good decision, yeah.
Because you can't buy this policy anymore. So my suggestion is, if you know any young people, have them seriously sit down with them and have them buy long-term care. Mm-hmm. Because it was the best thing he ever did.
Yeah, that is really good.
Sometimes you have to do it before somebody gets sick.
Right, right. You want to do it when you're younger.
He did it with simple. At that time, he didn't have a compound with simple interest.
Okay.
And because my theory at the time was, okay, I think at that time, it's $90 in bed cost in a long-term care facility. And that's what that policy covered. But as the expenses grow, you have Social Security coming in. And that's how I explained to my wife was that, okay, even if it doubled, I'd rather pay half the price out of pocket than all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So some type of cushion was important. The second thing, which you said earlier, I kind of I don't disagree with, but I just want to point out is that you use long-term care to protect the assets you want the kids in.
Right, right. That's exactly right.
Right.
Yeah.
So even if you are wealthy, you may want to use it to instill the ratio of expense to what it actually costs. It's going to be more beneficial if you're trying to protect assets to pass on to your children.
That's an excellent. What age do you recommend people buying long-term care insurance?
35. In the 40s.
Yeah, I had read 55, but I wasn't sure. So, okay. Yeah, in the 40s. There you go. Yeah. Okay, funeral expenses. The average cost, according to my research, is $12,000. I think that there are better options than prepaying. One idea is setting up a payable on death bank account. So you're saying, hey, you can put your $12,000 in this account and say, upon my death, it goes to X child to cover my funeral expenses. Okay, just an FYI for everyone, the federal law requires funeral homes to give you written price lists for the products and services it offers, so they have to give you price lists. And you can supply your own casket from a third party, and the funeral home should not give you a problem for doing that. Embalming is not necessarily legally required if the body is buried, cremated shortly after death. I think we're having a funeral kind of expert come in on our last class, so I'm going to leave that to the expert. And just an FYI, Social Security pays a one-time death benefit of $255. Whoa! Yes, yeah.
And like, that's lucky. Only on the first member that dies of a couple.
Yeah.
So it's only like,
yeah.
Whichever one dies first gets that whopping $255. The other one gets none.
Yeah,
so,
yes.
So you know.
Thank you, yes.
One point on the embalming. We live in Arkansas. The law up there is within 24 hours.
Okay.
So if you have not prearranged things,
you're out of luck. Yeah.
Well, somebody is.
Yeah.
You don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So just be aware.
Let's see. Yeah.
You know, prepayment does, though, lock in the current cost.
It does. Yeah.
Cost has escalated incredibly.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, there are pros and cons. Yeah. There is, I have heard too that there's a market for funeral plots. Like, if, like, oh, people, you know, prepay, and then they're like, oh, I don't, actually, I want to be buried somewhere else. So I think there's a market out there.
Secondhand
funeral plot market, yes.
And there are questions, and I'm sure this will be covered by whoever comes in, but there are questions that you want to ask, like, can I transfer? So for Brett and I, we've already taken care of all of that, but it is transferable because although we set it up, if down the road we move to Dallas to be closer to our daughter, then it transfers to a funeral home up there. So, you know, you want to kind of look at your situation and make sure that if you're prepaying, that you're doing something that is workable considering
that's a great point. Yeah.
Change. And we're very well aware of the fact that we might not still be here at that point in time. We might have been moved closer to our daughter. So that was one of the things we made sure that it was transferable.
That's a great point. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up, Beverly.
There are a lot of questions that you need to be asking, and there are a lot of options out there, and you don't have to have a casket at all.
Right. Right.
You don't have to be buried in a casket, so.
Yeah.
My sister came in from, shipped her husband from California, and she put him in funeral home here. But she had her own cast. So they told her, no, we cannot take this. You have to buy one here. So that must have started.
I don't know. From my research, that's, yeah, they can't say that.
If they put a cast back, they wouldn't take it.
Yeah.
To be one that's a better route. They stand you to take all of them.
Yeah. And then the last point I just wanted to say is if the deceased was receiving Social Security benefits, you must return the benefit that was received in the month of death. Or any later months. I know.
I mean, it's already been paid, but you got to send it back.
I know. Okay, so to end, I think that this information can be overwhelming. Do you have a question? Yeah, go ahead.
It cost me $1,000 to get my mom after she passed away. out of the hospital to the funeral home. Just to get her there, not anything else. The funeral home then took over. So you got to check also with wherever the person is, if they are in the hospital, long-term care, you have to make sure that you understand what those expenses are going to be. And another thing that my husband taught me is he made sure that we have life insurance to cover our final expenses and all other expenses. So mm-hmm. if we do not have death benefit insurance kind of stuff, it's all in our insurance policies.
Yeah, that's great. For the final biblical encouragement, I realize that some of the things I say it seems overwhelming at times. And I think that this verse is, or these series of verses, is really encouraging. So I'm going to just read it to close. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, nor about your body, what you will put on. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing? Look at the birds in the air. They neither sow nor reap nor gather into barns, and yet your Father, Heavenly Father, feeds them. Are you not more value than they? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to the span of life? And why are you anxious about clothing? Consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into heaven, into the oven, he will not much more clothe you, O you of little faith. Therefore, do not be anxious, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you will need them all. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. So just in close, you know, God is here to care and provide for us, and we put our faith in him. But I also encourage everybody to, you know, break out Excel, you know, put a piece of paper and really analyze your expenses and do a little bit of planning, and it will pay great dividends, I think, in your retirement, having long-term care insurance. Just little things can make a big difference in helping us care for the people we love in our lives. So that's it. Yeah. Thank you all so much.